Hello everyone, my name is Vlad Glavanu. I am the Head of Psychology and Counseling at Webster University Geneva and the Director of the Webster Center for Creativity and Innovation. And it is my great pleasure to be here today with Yoed Kened, who has a doctorate in neuroscience and is currently a postdoctoral fellow at the Department of Psychology, University of Pennsylvania. Hi, Yoed.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here.
So we're having a conversation about creativity, since your work is kind of spread around many, many fields, but creativity is a bit of a red thread, I would say, right? Throughout these different...
it's a great ground if you're interested in complex cognition or it's good because creativity, people are sometimes are upset, but I think of it as an empty concept. It can be filled with so many different things.
And what are you usually filling it with?
I'm
what
really interested in the relation of knowledge and creativity. Mm-hmm. My PhD was very much influenced by what is known as the associative theory of creativity and how creativity is related to our ability to search through our memory and connect weakly related concepts together into a novel and applicable sort of concept, which is so intuitive. And it's an interesting story itself because the author of this theory, Sernoff Mednick, he didn't study creativity, he studied schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And he had only two or three papers on creativity. But everyone agrees that we search through memory, we manipulate information, novelty is related to our ability to break away from prototypical concepts or answers or ideas. How do we do that? And do we have the tool to do that? So that was like the original, I wouldn't say the original. What really got into creativity is my interest and fascination with problems and problem construction. But I read in my first year of my PhD, I read this very interesting paper on how insight is a consequence of dynamical reconfiguration of our memory system as we realize pieces of information relating to a thing that we're studying that shapes and reshapes our concept of that.
So insight, problem solving, networks, memory, these are keywords, right?
Yes, and
knowledge,
yes.
As we
knowledge,
talked about.
Memory search. I when I'm asked to give what I'm interested in two sentences, then I say that I am interested in studying how the structure of our memory constrains cognitive processes operating upon it.
Yes.
Such as in creativity and intelligence and memory search. In typical and also in clinical populations, we know that schizophrenic patients have this notion of loose or free associations, loose or disentangled, disorganized memory, whatever we say, whatever comes to mind, which doesn't seem to be connected. So what is different in their memory organization than ours? And coming from a family that has some mathematical background, and then my dad is a mathematician, my brother is a physicist, was drawn into using quantitative tools from network science to try and represent memory structure and then ask whether we can use these novel tools to quantify different aspects of creativity or this very thin slice of what I'm interested in. Relating to creativity.
Before I ask you more about these networks and how they work and how you study them, it seems interesting to me you started by saying that we fill up the space of what we call creativity with different things. And in psychology, at least, we tend to converge on the fact that you need novelty, originality of sorts, and you need some kind of value appropriateness, utility. And the things you mentioned about weak connections, about even mental illness and the novelty, which is quite explicit, makes me wonder, what happens to the practicality or value side of these associations? How does research done within this this paradigm take into account? Is there like a second step selection process, or how does that part come in?
So I think that part is the least that is understood. in our understanding of cognitive process related to creativity. The last couple of decades, there's been a lot of emphasis on the roles of top-down executive processes, cognitive control, attention, evaluation processes that allow us to sort the relevant, more relevant versus less relevant, relevant ideas. But I don't think that captures what you're asking. And there was a very interesting session I went to in the annual meeting of the American Psychological Association, yes. On the definition of creativity.
Yeah.
And everybody agrees that novelty is important, but there were very different views on that other piece of it. And at the end, supposedly most people said we can't define creativity because we don't know how to define that sort of evaluation part. There's different definitions of what that other, what else is missing other than novelty.
Yes.
And I think that relates to the different sort of flavors that are in creativity, because in art, you evaluate novelty differently than you do in day-to-day problem solving versus art, I don't know, sort of scientific genius, right? Yes. There's all these different notions of, right? And there are, as you are probably know much more about, just cultural evaluations and cultural relevance to creativity. So I don't know a lot about that.
I think it's interesting now that it makes me think that a lot of, and you do correct me if I'm wrong, because this is not particularly my area of and my approach to creativity, but it seems like we can understand a lot about the generation and emergence of novelty if we look at these searches within memory, the type of links, the even reaction time when it comes to different types of associations. And then one important theoretical question is that second process really a second process, second step, or is it already embedded within the way in which these networks are formed, which probably, presumably, resonates with a utility value for our lives? Otherwise, why would they be organized that way? So, I don't know, that's,
I agree. I think this is a very strong part of my current studies. Trying to conducting a neuroimaging study that is trying to ask that, because potentially maybe at the brain level we can more directly try to assess that. But thinking about Simonton's and Campbell's blind variation, selection retention, talking about a two process sort of stage, and we can't throw out the evaluation part out of the equation. But is it serial, is it parallel, is it the part, is it synergic to the novelty process? I think we really don't, I personally think that we really don't understand the task that we use to measure creativity from a cognitive psychology perspective.
And
some of my work is trying to better measure that, or to push forward the measurements that we use to try to identify the strategies that people use. So more recently started to looking at the strategies that people use when they're asked to generate novel ideas.
Yes.
How much is that related to their knowledge about the object? How much is that related to experience that they have? How much are they imagining breaking apart a newspaper or a box? And so what is the role of action, and what types of actions are potentially students thinking or imagining when they're trying to do these sorts of tasks that potentially tap into something that is somehow related to a notion of creativity? As more people, which is a good thing, are moving into studying different notions of creativity, it's becoming, I think, more complex what measures we have and what they measure and how that relates to creative potential.
Precisely. So, I mean, it's as you said, if we go back to the notion of evaluation, I feel, and we had this conversation earlier about the meaning of concepts, and I feel like sometimes we're trapped by everyday meanings of what we mean by evaluate, and often we think this is always happening with an external viewer or audience and some form of, but there are different ways of looking at evaluation, right? So that there is a there is maybe it's not an either or kind of question, if it's part of the process and also a second step in the process. Yeah. that could very interesting. So for our listeners who might not be very familiar with semantic networks and how we study them, how would you define or describe them in kind of a
So network science in general, I'll take a step back and I'll try to not take too much time on this, but network science is a field that has developed very rapidly in the last two decades. And it's based on, it has two sort of theoretical fathers. One is mathematics and specifically graph theory. And the other actually is social psychology.
Yes.
So the idea is that can we use mathematical tools to represent complex systems as having parts that interact with each other.
Yeah.
So in a social network that a lot of people are not familiar with this term, right, we have people and their relations.
Mm-hmm.
And can we quantify these sorts of interactions?
Yes.
And then once we have such a representation, can we use quantitative measures to study different properties of these networks?
Yes.
It's become very popular in brain research. It's really popular in brain research, but in a lot of different fields as well. But surprisingly, even though a lot of cognitive theory is based on network perspective, specifically in language and memory, these sorts of tools haven't been widely used at cognitive research till last decade or so. So the idea is that we can, if one is interested in how the organization of knowledge or memory is related to creativity, potentially through the idea that more creative individuals have a more flexible memory structure that allows them to somehow differently search through their memory, then can we use these tools to represent concepts in their memory and how they are organized?
Yes.
So that is a very sort of very rough overview. But in principle, every system can be, if you can break it down into its nodes, components that you want to study, and if you have ways to define the interaction between them, then you can use this sort of mathematical abstraction to represent the system. There are two levels here. One is this is a methodological tool.
Yeah.
It allows us to ask quantitative questions about stuff. And then there's a more theoretical level. Is memory organized as a network?
Yes. And what would be the latest or your answer to that? I assume you would be on board with this, right? If you use the tool methodologically.
So a lot of people, I don't know a lot, but not everybody who's using network science are theoretically committed to that sort of level.
Yeah.
People are using at the kind of level to study phonological networks and different sort of networks. It's not only semantic networks, even though that I think is the most popular sort of analysis. What I think is that memory, we have memories for different things, right? Yeah. We have concepts, we have knowledge that is quite good. We have a lot of knowledge. And when we think about something, we manage to retrieve information about that knowledge. And we are, to me, associative creatures. We move from one thing to another. That has to have some sort of connections or relations between one concept and the other. So what is the exact sort of nature? What are the features? What is the space? How multidimensional is this sort of space? That is a very complicated, yet to be determined question.
Absolutely.
But we can start using these tools to simplify or approximate specific sort of levels of that. And I think that really helps us push forward. And also, again, trying to quantify notions of creativity can help us better move forward in our understanding of this notion. So I don't know if that's a good answer, but
no, it's very, you know, you gave a broad overview and you outlined the challenges. I don't think in this conversation we can solve them, sadly.
Yeah.
But it's very nice to be mindful of them. And what comes to mind to me, you know, listening to this, is the old paradox of you're trying to predict somehow. We try to understand, but also at the end of the day, in a scientific manner, perhaps try to predict as well a phenomenon that by definition should have surprise or surprising elements to it. Otherwise, if it was fully predicted, maybe people wouldn't even call it creativity. So if we look at these relation between knots and the interactions and the different values, different strengths, you would imagine that our thinking is guided perhaps by a variety of variables, many of which we can't even measure or estimate yet, into certain directions. So it's a kind of regularity of thought in some way. So how do we explain creativity? What happens in these networks? Is it an external input? What disturbs maybe a more direct link of leading us to a certain route within our network? How does creativity come about in a network?
So we're not there yet. Mm. But what I can say is that so my research has shown that low versus high creative individuals have different global structures of their memory. It's not there yet to answering what is the effect of having a process that leads to a creative output.
Yes.
But what some people have shown through different computational approaches, studying the a notion of semantic distance of ideas, have shown that instructions to be creative affect the semantic distance of the responses.
Mm.
So in that sense, there is initial evidence that is accumulating that when we are in the process of generating novel ideas, that does affect our memory structure, and that there are now tools to study that. And my research is slowly moving forward to understand to studying dynamics of semantic networks, especially because of that interest in what happens when we are thinking about a creative, trying to generate creative ideas, and can we quantify that effect? That there are a lot of methodological challenges to do that. So that requires much more basic research to improve the tools.
Yes.
But again, there are theoretical ideas on this sort of restructuring, creating new connections across concepts.
And maybe there is, you know, my kind of passion for the social cultural side, but for instance, Bartlett, right, who was one of the grandfathers or the fathers of this more cognitive approach and the notion of schemas and all of that. I seem to remember he talked about creativity in this very group cultural framework, in which he said that novelty always comes a bit from outside the group, and it's the process of making that familiar that also involves a lot of creativity. So maybe it is the value of interacting and maybe perspective taking as well, since we mentioned it in our previous conversations, that adds that spark that can lead to new pathways and new, I don't know, it's hypothesizing.
No, definitely. Our talk before about perspective taking, I think it's very important here. One thing that you can do is you say, okay, say that you have a representation of a memory structure that relates to differences in creativity. We now have the tools to simulate search processes over memory, over this sort of network representation. You have to make a lot of assumptions here, right? That this representation is valid, that it relates to creativity, that it relates to this theoretical construct of memory, and that this sort of memory process that you're simulating somehow mimics what happens in the cognitive system. But if you do all of that, and there are a few studies like that, and I had one very small sort of project on that, then you can start talking about the process. And this is the main theme of my research, the interaction between structure and processes. Yes. One big problem that we have is that all of this work in semantic networks is based on verbal output that participants generate. And that is confounded by the retrieval process.
Mm.
So can we, one big objection that I've gotten several times over the years is how can we disentangle retrieval processes versus the memory structure? Are we actually getting to some sort of approximation of the memory structure?
Yeah.
Or is it all biased to retrieval? Free associations, which is the main sort of task that I prefer to use, tries to control for that and says that it's sort of potentially a natural process that people are not supposed to be influenced by any sort of external instructions. But even then, you have all these biases. So, but I think that's a general argument on any sort of cognitive or psycholinguistic sort of studies, that we're always constrained by the quality of the information that we get and how we can pinpoint whatever it is that we're studying to one parameter, one variable, or one sort of manipulation. Right, that is the big challenge, and especially in this sort of construct that is so fluid, right? It's like water. Exactly. What is creativity? We don't really...
It escapes you, but I think what we can do meaningfully is to put down these kind of methodological and epistemological landmarks of if we believe that, and if we measure like this, then this is what we get. But never get trapped into thinking that is it. This is where,
I agree.
Where it, you know, because there will always, and it's nice to, even if we're mindful of what happened historically a few decades ago and what will happen maybe in the future, we see there is change. So the best we can do is to document our thinking as best as possible so that people understand where we came from, right?
I just want to say that I think that this is why, to me, this sort of cognitive revolution that I think that happened in creativity, that's saying, let's break this notion, like in problem solving, let's break this notion of creativity into smaller pieces that we can study separately or side by side, has pushed forward a lot of research in creativity, because now it's not as murky swamp as it was before. It's like, okay, we're studying memory and creativity, we're studying attention. It has a downside, the fact that people are fractioning and moving away from each other. People studying memory and creativity are over there, and people studying attention are over there. But it allows us to better understand potentially specific components.
It's the breadth versus depth kind
of
trade-off.
And we need to establish a strong community to be creative about creativity.
And towards the end, I want to ask you what I'm sure many people who might be listening would think about, because I would expect, you know, we work in this field of psychology and maybe, you know, kind of relating to other disciplines, but many people have a practical concern. And we also, I hope, and I know actually that we want to see our findings be meaningful for others.
Yeah.
From this broad, incipient, and yet quite complex approach you're using, what would you say are the takeaways that maybe an educator could build on? Or would you say it's too early to start advising?
So there's a lot. I don't know how much time we have, but I could talk about different ideas.
Go ahead.
from my PhD supervisor and I, we published this theoretical paper which talks about creativity as a balance between flexibility and rigidity. And the idea is that we can use a network approach to represent semantic memory across different populations and relating to across different levels of creativity and intelligence. In this specific paper, we present a spectrum that ranges from autism to schizophrenia. And the idea is that creativity requires a balance between, again, a structured memory system that allows retrieval and efficient comprehension in a communicative social settings, context, while you also want a flexible system that allows you to be novel, and you want some sort of balance between these two forces. It's based also on a book that was published by a psychiatrist. So you want to foster this sort of level. You want to constantly, you can, you need to think about how to constantly strive for that balance, right? It is school education. Well, I have small kids now, but I am worried about all these sort of things and how you can constantly push them to also try and think outside of the box and to promote this. So reading, right, learning, you know, it's nothing that surprising, but we can measure this sense of, now we have tools that we can say, okay, let's measure this sort of knowledge representation, and can we, is it overly structured? Is it not as structured? We potentially have these tools. This is, we're very far at this point from having more sort of a, applicable approaches.
Yes.
But I definitely think the idea, once you can quantify this construct, and when you can ask more sensitively and rigorously what sort of important features in the cognitive system you want to strive for. Yes. You don't want to be overly creative. You don't want the system to be overly flexible, right? You want a balance.
And it's very inspiring, this idea of balance, because I feel like the field has been moving a lot, and the social representation of creativity into novelty and going towards extremes of disconnect and being out there, being really out there. So what you're saying also is that, okay, you have to be outside of the box, but you also have to know your box and know what the box is made of. And sometimes boxes are not necessarily bad. It depends how flexible you are around them, right?
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah. And this is why I think this is what's drawing me into more of this evaluative processes and how we can better understand what we need there. Mm-hmm. It also just really changes across cultures, across people, across populations. But interested from a scientific perspective, being able to put on the same scale different populations, different groups, and being able to generate qualitative measures that you can compare across groups, I think that has a lot of strength in it.
But it requires also a lot of creativity, because the challenges are quite high, and yet if you don't strive to do it, and I said, I think being mindful of our own assumptions and the limitations, because nothing will ever give us the truth, the full story of it. I don't think there is a true story necessarily, but it is through dialogues that, you know, we can learn what you're doing. Maybe there's a social approach out there that could help.
For sure. Creativity is not only about knowledge or a semantic network. It's a lot about different components working together to generate this higher level magic that a lot of people strive for and a lot of people are excited about. And at the individual level, at the cognitive level, the brain level, at the social level, they all interact. One other thing that a network, this sort of quantitative network approach allows us to do is potentially bridge across different levels. So you can potentially use the same approach to study the social network of highly creative individuals, and also their semantic network, and also their brain network, and saying, can I somehow connect across these three very, very different levels?
Interesting. So they can use that as a tool to build bridges, make analogies.
Yes. And this is why I'm very excited about all of this. And I think there's so much potential in helping us, again, push the envelope forward into making better understanding what it is at different levels.
Excellent. So this will call for a second podcast with you at the moment where the studies you mentioned, you know, come to fruition, and the field itself evolves. There's definitely a lot of cumulative, and hopefully exciting there will times. Be a qualitative leap, you know, along the way.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Yoed.
Thank you.
This has been Yoed Kennett from University of Pennsylvania, and in conversation with Vlad Glavanu from the Webster Center of Creativity and Innovation. If you would like to listen to more conversations about creativity, do look look for them at podcast.webster.ch. Thank you very much.